And the Grammy goes to I Can't Breathe, Her.
A few years ago, Her won one of the biggest awards at the Grammys, Song of the Year.
And I didn't imagine that my fear and that my pain would turn into impact and it would possibly turn into change. And I think that's...
The song's called I Can't Breathe. It gets its name from the last words that Eric Garner spoke before he was choked to death by an NYPD officer.
America's largest police force is facing a serious controversy over a video that's gone viral showing officers arresting a suspect who later died.
Her released the track less than a month after George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. It's part of a long history of musicians using their art to speak out about police brutality. From NWA to Kendrick Lamar. Back in the 90s, an up-and-coming hip-hop duo were doing the same thing. Their names are Yasiin Bey and Talib Kweli. You might know Yasiin as Mos Def. That's what he was going by back then. Together, the two of them are known as Black Star. Socially conscious hip-hop is their bread and butter. So back in 1999, when an unarmed black man was killed by four white cops in the Bronx, they knew they had to respond. The man's name was Amadou Diallo. He was 23 years old. The police fired 41 shots into the doorway where he stood. 19 hit him. And the first one likely killed him.
A lot of musicians released songs inspired by Amadou's death. Wyclef Jean, The Strokes, Roy Campbell Jr., and most famously, Bruce Springsteen.
It ain't no secret.
But Yasiin and Talib's project was different. It was special. They got 41 artists to come and feature on the EP, and they planned to give the money they made to charity. They called the project Hip Hop for Respect, because this wasn't just any protest song. This was hip hop's response. It was coming from people who were the same race as Amadou, who were close to the same age, who even lived in the same city. A city that was angry. But you've probably never heard of that EP. It never won any awards, it's not on streaming platforms, and it was barely played on the radio, which was a huge deal back then. We spoke to journalists who've been covering hip-hop for decades. Even some of them had never heard of the song. But we wanted to know, if an EP brings together over 41 rappers to protest the killing of a black man by police, but no one hears it, does it still matter? Does Hip Hop for Respect still matter?
This is Shoe Leather, an investigative podcast that digs up stories from New York City's past to find out how yesterday's news affects us today. This season, we're going back to 1999 to tell the story of Amadou Diallo.
Amadou Diallo was unarmed, a 22-year-old West African immigrant with no criminal history, shot to death last week by four New York City police officers. The
men are all... I'm Khadija Alam.
And I'm Rachel Kahn. This is Shoe Leather Season 5, After Amadou. You're listening to This Is a Fucking Business.
In the days after Amadou Diallo's death, Jarrett Meyer is at work. He runs the record label Ruckus.
And I do remember being in my office and Devin pulling me aside, and a good portion of the artists signed to Ruckus were black artists, particularly black male artists. Devin was a black woman.
Jarrett's talking about Devin Roberson, who was the head publicist at Ruckus.
And she wanted to make sure I fully understood the gravity of the situation. I do remember her being like, we're going to do something and you're going to support this. And it was everything stops for a moment and we address it. Business is not usual. It was a very big deal.
Ruckus is an independent label. So when the artists care about a cause, Ruckus listens.
If you're assigned to, like, let's say Universal, and all of a sudden you want Universal to care about, you know, something that's going on in the world that's meaningful to you as an artist, their attitude is, you know, we're a big corporation, we don't do that. And if you have a problem with it, you can sit down because there's a million other artists here. We were really in partnership with those artists. I mean, it wasn't, there was no label without those artists. And so we were there to very much service their vision.
And the label especially cares when those artists are Yasin Bey and Talib Kweli.
Yasin and Talib are Ruckus's rising stars.
Shine light into the darkness.
In 1998, a year before Amadou's death, Yasin and Talib create a duo called Black Star. They release an album. Mos Def and Talib Kweli are Black Star. Pretty self-explanatory.
It's like that. Mos Def and Kweli.
Black Star, the guide me. Black Star, Black Star.
Black Star does a style of hip-hop called conscious rap, or progressive rap. Here's Yasin and Talib explaining what that means in an interview in 1999.
People always say that, like, you know, we're progressive rap or we're purist hip-hop or, like, you know. And I'm like, okay, if that's the case, then, like, what are the alternatives to this word, like, purist as opposed to, like, watered down?
Or progressive as opposed to stagnant rap.
Right.
You know, you're not one of those platinum stagnant rappers. You're more progressive.
You know, I mean, we just... You know, we rhyming about what it was sincere and real to us. I mean, we feel like we have a responsibility to be mindful of what we're saying. And we're not going to make a certain type of record just because that's the type of record you got to make money.
But for Talib and Yasin, even a serious song can be a hit.
What a way to start your day, yo, it's like.
The album's lead single, Definition, reached 60 on the Billboard Hot 100. In the song, Yasin and Talib rap about the murders of hip-hop legends Tupac Shakur and the Notorious B.I.G. I get why the song was a hit. It's talking about serious issues like violence in hip-hop, but man, is it catchy. In that song, Definition, Yasin and Talib sample a song called Stop the Violence. It was a big hit in the 80s.
1, 2, 3, the crew is called BDP. And if you want to go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip hop, Y-O.
And that's what Yasin and Talib aim for. Making hits, but not sacrificing meaning to do it. So when a young black man is shot and killed in the South Bronx, the birthplace of hip hop, they aren't going to keep quiet. They're going to do something about it.
In March 1999, a month after Amadou's death, the four cops who killed him are charged with second-degree murder. A month after that, on April 23rd, Talib and Yasin enter Sony Studios in Manhattan to begin recording what would become the EP, Hip Hop for Respect. In tow are dozens of rappers and Organized Noize. They're the iconic production team that flew in all the way from Atlanta. They had already produced hits for Outkast and TLC, like this one.
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Please stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
Organized Noize want to make something hot, something big. Yasin and Talib had initially only planned to release one song, but so many artists want to contribute to the project that they end up making four.
You know, it was dope energy to see how many people, you know, just came out, you know, to really want to support it and, you know, want to be a part of it, so.
That's Renee John Sandy II. He's one of the assistant executive producers of Hip Hop for Respect. He was in the studio when everyone started showing up.
you know, I think there was a lot of magic in the room. You know, I think, you know, it was just good to see everyone kind of get together. I mean, because there wasn't...
The recording session starts in the morning, and it goes until midnight. For the most part, Hip Hop for Respect comes together in that one sprawling studio session, which is really impressive.
I thought everyone came with a tight verse, and I think that's one of the really cool things about, especially all these artists, you know, they take their craft very seriously, so they're not going to get on a collaborative cut and, you know, put like 8 or 16 bars that's just going to be kind of like BS, you know, so, you know.
Most of them are from New York. Many of them are huge names. And they're all in one studio, coming together to make music about an issue that they care about. And it sounds like this. The song is called One for Love. It's the lead single from Hip Hop for Respect. Talib kicks it off with the intro.
Yo, you sent out the signal, right? And this is what happened. The voice of hip hop got heard, never compromised. This is how we put it down. Come on.
Cool G Rap mentions the NYPD's street crime unit. That's the police squad who shot Amadou Diallo. Sporty Thieves, another hip hop duo, rap about being pulled over by the cops for no reason.
I'm sober, they pulled me over. What I do, yo?
What we do, yo?
Po-po go, I'm driving too slow. Cool, yo. Eyes touring them, exploring them.
Damn.
Four of them, that's why I'm ignoring them.
Uh-oh. Shabam Sadiq name drops Amadou and others who were shot and killed in the Bronx by the NYPD.
Another mother cries. Anthony Byers, I'll run a bumpers. Diallo, let it keep happening and there's more to follow. It's even deeper than that. Pinnell shot in the back. Forever we fighting cuss, but the world's still in dust. So many bullets just to stop one man. Is that the plan? To leave a sword dead in the street? Nah.
Pharaoh Monch mentions the protests for Amadou at City Hall.
God, please allow me to preach for him. A voiceless man through his spirit, I speak for him. Step to City Hall for Delph, through it for Dolo, with visions of cops inside the Public Enemy logo.
And everyone on the track comes together for the final chorus.
My people unite and let's all get down. We got to have one love, peace and understanding. One love, one love, one life, one hate.
At Sony Music Studios, on the day they record Hip Hop for Respect, Talib says that making music would be the best way for them to contribute to the protests taking place across the city. And not just any music, but hip hop. Music that began in the place where Amadou Diallo was killed.
All right, so what's up?
We were hoping to just kind of like start a bit at the beginning and get some context about the hip hop industry in the 90s. So could you tell us about the birth of hip hop in the Bronx?
Well, I mean, you're not going to need all of that, right?
We're talking to Dan Charnas. He's a music journalist and wrote a book called The Big Payback: The History of the Business of Hip Hop.
Hip hop, even though it is now global, is really, or at least began as a local art form, a local folk music, if you will. It was not even music. It was just stuff kids were doing at parties, right?
Many trace the birth of hip hop back to one particular party in the South Bronx in 1973. The music for the party was played live by a kid who called himself DJ Cool Herc. Herc was only 18. It was a back-to-school party. Like any good DJ, Herc noticed when everybody flocked to the dance floor. It was during the instrumental breaks of the records he played. So using two turntables, he found a way to just play those breaks and to isolate the beats. It was a hit, and soon everybody in the Bronx was doing it. During the breaks, people would dance, hence break dancing, and speak to hype up the crowd, rapping. You're probably wondering why we haven't played you any of this music. That's because it was all done live, at parties and community events. The first hip-hop record didn't even come out for 6 more years, in 1979.
Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet.
All this ecosystem, too, was developing outside the mainstream music business, because around 1979, around the time of the first rap record, disco was peaking and, frankly, had already experienced a kind of symbolic backlash. And by 1980, 1981, disco was a dirty word in the business, and rap and rap records were seen as simply another fad, a child of disco. And so hip-hop really needed to create its own institutions outside of the music business in order to survive.
Now it's the 1980s.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Songs like The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five describe what it feels like. It's the heyday of the crack epidemic. Much of the South Bronx is rubble after landlords realized they'd make more money off their buildings if they just burned them down for insurance.
Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stairs. You know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out. I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front.
You had a number of different assaults on young people in New York and around New York, and that hip hop in many ways was a response to those attacks, just bald-faced attacks on black youth. Public Enemy incorporated a lot of this into their lyrics. Remember, it's the Reagan era too, so you're again facing a severe federal neglect, state neglect, city neglect, contempt, not just neglect, but contempt.
It's against this background that hip-hop is flourishing. It's developing its voice outside of the mainstream.
And it allowed for a fertile ground, not only for creative ideas, but for what I might call, you know, sort of the authentic political voice. A lot of people like to make a little too much of this. Like, hip-hop was not founded as a voice for the voiceless. It's like the founders of hip-hop didn't necessarily see it that way. Their voice was their voice. We're sort of romanticizing it looking back. Folks in the early part of hip-hop wanted to get paid for their performances. They wanted to have hit records. They wanted to wear flashy clothes. But at the same time, they could do that by talking about things that they were facing.
This is important. Even when it was creative and new and independent, hip-hop wasn't always about politics or struggle. But artists realized that they could get big off of rapping about their lives. And they do get big. As hip-hop gets more popular, it's not operating outside of the music business anymore. In the 90s, hip-hop is the music business.
When a genre becomes mainstreamed, when it becomes big business, it just naturally becomes debased. What do I mean by that? By debased, I mean flattened, right? That in early hip-hop, the creative prerogatives and the culture promoted difference, right? If you were biting somebody else's sound in hip-hop, that was a bad thing. But when the impetus is to get on the radio and to have the next hit, sameness becomes the most important thing, right? That's what corporations do to culture. That's what corporate life does to culture. It promotes a flattening and a sameness.
Here's where independent labels like Raucous come in. Raucous and its artists are releasing different music. They don't sound like Jay-Z. Their music is less flashy, more lyrical. It's like the more political strain of music in the 80s, when hip-hop was trying to fight the power. or like that song Talib and Yasin sampled in their first album, Stop the Violence.
And if you want to go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip-hop, why?
It's not a secret that Ruckus is making a different style of music. The authenticity, or at least the performance of it, is part of their brand. There's a scene about Ruckus in Brown Sugar, a romantic comedy released in 2002. Brown Sugar is a love story between a hip-hop journalist and a record exec who's fighting with his label. He thinks they prioritize money over talent.
That's what we do here. We make hits. Now, if you want to keep it real, you go to Ruckus. We keep it profitable.
Fun fact, Yasin Bey plays a side character in the film, a rapper who won't sign with the main label because it's too commercial. So in 1999, there's a real split in hip-hop. And on one side, you've got underground rappers like Talib Kweli and Yasin Bey working with indie labels like Ruckus.
And so it doesn't surprise me that if somebody is going to be making a political record, that it would come out of that camp.
It's February 2000, a year after Amadou Diallo is killed. The trial for the cops who shot him finally reaches a verdict.
What was your verdict in reference to the charge of murder in the second degree under the first count of the indictment?
Not guilty.
Each of the four officers are found not guilty on six charges, including murder and manslaughter. A couple months later, in April, Yasin and Talib finally released their EP, Hip Hop for Respect. It was supposed to come out the previous year, but the delay in its release might work in their favor. Because the cops were acquitted, another wave of protests is taking over the city. And protests sometimes have anthems. They choose this song, One for Love, as the lead single, the song that came together in one long session. They also made a music video for it. In the video, artists rap in the middle of a makeshift shooting range. You can see NYPD vehicles and officers in uniform, newspaper clippings about Amadou's death, photos of him and other black people who were killed by the police. Reverend Al Sharpton even makes an appearance, saying the lyrics of the chorus.
One God, one love, one aim, one voice, one fight.
Jarrett Meyer, the co-founder of Ruckus, says that the video got some play on BET. But they were also hoping that the video would be played on TRL.
What's TRL?
Oh, you don't know what TRL is?
Well, see, now I feel ignorant.
TRL became like the sort of staple of MTV. It was like it was called Total Request Live. And it was like sort of like their after school show. And it was this very, very strange mix of like Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears with like Marilyn Manson and like Fred Durst.
Interesting.
Jarrett says that MTV was a big supporter of Ruckus until it went full-blown TRL. Even though we didn't know what TRL was, it was a huge deal, from its first episode in 1998 to its last one 10 years later. Viewers would vote on which music videos they wanted to watch, making it the definitive countdown of the hottest music videos at that time. The single is arguably the most important song on a record, at least commercially. It's a song that becomes a music video. More importantly, though, it's the song that a record label sends to radio. We've tried speaking to Talib and Yasin over the past couple of months. We wanted to know about their hopes for Hip Hop for Respect and One for Love, the lead single. We wanted to ask them how they measured its success. We made it through to their managers, but that's about it.
Okay, it's Friday, April 5th. Rachel and I just got out of our business essentials class.
Yeah.
And Hugh, who is
Yasin's manager? Maybe?
Manager or publicist,
yeah,
or something.
The gatekeeper to talking to Yasin Bey.
Just responded and said that Yasin wants to talk about it with Talib and then he'll get back to us.
Yeah. And that's just so crazy because it means that they're talking about it. I feel like we're either going to get both of them or we're going to get none.
Spoiler alert, we got none. But Talib also has his own podcast, People's Party with Talib Kweli. Here he is in 2021 talking about hip hop for respect.
And so, well, there was a lot of numbers conversations. And I remember talking to Jared and being like, look, we have to do this. And I remember you being very honest with me. You were like, look, we're going to lose money on this. Mm. I'm not going to make any money, but here's what we can do. We can press up. I can spend, you know, X amount of thousands for the video. We can press up this amount of records. And we did enough to make it able to compete.
Right.
It was like, I can do this. We have enough income to do this and not lose our shirt. And so that's what they did. And it was a hard lesson because I'm from the self-destruction era.
You need to know what self-destruction is. It's a little confusing. Remember Stop the Violence? That song that was a big hit in the 80s? The song that Talib and Yasin sampled in their first album?
And if you want to go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip-hop, why yo?
One of the artists who wrote that song formed a group called the Stop the Violence Movement in the late 80s after a young fan was killed at one of their shows. They released a song called Self-Destruction.
America's problem is
Self-Destruction was a huge success. It brought together a bunch of different hip-hop stars. It was an anti-violence anthem. And the proceeds were even donated to charity. Remind you of anything? Self-Destruction inspired a whole generation of rappers, like Talib Kweli.
And I had a romantic idea about the music business. The music business was different when Self-Destruction came out.
Yeah.
There was a lot more solidarity between the program directors and the DJs. By the time we did Hip Hop Respect, it wasn't like that. It was pure corporate. Right. So,
despite all the similarities, it turned out that Talib and Yasin's Hip Hop for Respect was no Self-Destruction.
For a song released in 2000, success hinged on one thing, the radio.
Hey! Oh! Sun 97, New York's number one station, blazing hip-hop and R&B. Big day today. First of all, it's Friday.
In New York, Hot 97 is an institution. In the early 1990s, the station was struggling. It had switched over from pop to house and dance music, and its ratings were falling. In 1992, Hot 97 started adding hip-hop and R&B into their playlist, and things started to turn around. By 1993, the station was New York's destination for rap music. You can see it in their slogan. Hot 97 is where hip-hop lives. Jarrett Meyer, the founder of Raucous, knew that Hot 97 would hold the ticket to their success.
At that time, you know, we wanted it on Hot 97. We wanted the message out. And so there's some artists on there that you would expect. Mos, Kweli, De La Soul, Common, right? But there's also like Sporty Thieves on there, right? Who you may not recall, but at that time were played on Hot 97 all the time.
So there was some strategy involved.
You know, we thought it was going to be something that maybe they did stop once an hour on Hot 97 to play.
We relayed this to Dan Charnas, our hip hop historian.
And they were really purposefully, you know, they were putting players in there that they hoped would get it commercial play, even though it was about, you know, police brutality.
Like who?
Jarrett Meyer said Sporty Thieves at the time. Common was on it.
Sporty Thieves were not big.
Yeah. I think he was thinking of like Hot 97 would play it.
It was very, very hard to get people to think about hip hop as an engine for political thought by the end of the 1990s, because those were not the dominant values even in the hip hop audience.
The big DJ on Hot 97 was someone named Funkmaster Flex. He would break records, which meant that he would pick a little known song and blow it up to a wider audience. He broke Jay-Z's record in 1996.
And look, he cares about what's hot, right? He'll play a song if he thinks it's hot, meaning, you know, I don't know, good beat, you know, great verses.
But Flex didn't break 1-4 Love. He just didn't play it that much. So even with a music video, over 41 rappers, and the fresh injustice of the Amadou Diallo verdict. The song didn't sell. Things were changing in hip-hop culture. But was that the only reason the song never got played? Or was there something else? We decided to ask some hip-hop journalists.
We talked to Gabby Bulgarelli, the senior producer of Louder Than a Riot, NPR's hip-hop podcast. We asked Gabby what she thought of the song.
I liked it, and I was definitely surprised by it. It definitely surprised me. I thought it was thought-provoking and not shitty. You know, I think it's hard to do both. I think it's hard to make rap that makes people want to move and make rap that also makes people want to stop and think. I think the use your brain and move your feet music don't always necessarily intertwine. So I think this is doing that pretty well.
For most of the people we talked to about Hip Hop for Respect, it was their first time hearing it. In 2000, it wasn't on the radio. Today, it's not even on Spotify. This is Ross Scareno. He's been a music journalist for over a decade.
I guess like I feel slightly embarrassed that I've never heard the song before. Like, I don't think it's gone on to have, and I'm not, I do wonder why, like, but it doesn't have the same reputation as like Self-Destruction or something. And maybe because it's like a tougher song to swallow. And it doesn't have like a neat narrative about like hip hop, like looking out for itself and trying to like, you know, police itself. Like it's, but at the same time, like, I'm like, how did this song not resurface during, you know, moments around like Eric Garner or George Floyd or, you know, I don't know. It's a real time capsule of a song, and I'm like glad to be aware of it now.
We went back to Dan Charnas.
All right, I'm listening right now. Hold on a sec. Nah. I mean, you know, it's a posse cut in the late 1990s. The first person rapping is G-Rap, who hasn't had a hit in forever, right? Not dissing, right? You know, love Rod Digga, love G-Rap, but the person who's the hottest person in the world at that point is Jay. Like, Jay is ascendant, and Jay's not on there, frankly, because Jay doesn't care. And the people who love Jay-Z don't care. And that's sad, right? It's really, really sad.
So imagine you're Funkmaster Flex. You've got the power to make or break a record. You want to play great music. You, according to Dan Charnas, don't care too much about politics, at least not more than you care about sound. Do you play 1-4 Love? Evidently, no. We tried to get Flex to answer that question himself, but we got no response. The project's failure to take off hit Talib Kweli hard. It changed how he thought about hip-hop. Here he is again, talking about it on his own podcast.
And DJ said, play it. And I didn't understand why. I know why now. Yeah. Because Raucous, even though they had the money to put it out and get it out, they did not have the money. Or they weren't willing, for good reason, to spend the money on promoting it like a single.
Right.
Because we're giving all the proceeds away to charity.
Right.
And so because it wasn't promoted as a radio record, no one played it. And so it was disheartening, but it was a good lesson for me. It was like, oh, this is a fucking business. We might care about police brutality. Everybody wants to do the right thing. But at the end of the day, who's going to pay for this?
Exactly.
Who's got the bill at the end of the day? And I was I was kind of down in the dumps about the fact that people didn't really play the song or support it in the industry.
To Talib Kweli, it's not really the radio that's to blame, or the subject matter, or the beat, or the features. No one's to blame, really. It's just business.
If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? If a project brings together over 41 rappers to protest police brutality, but no one hears it, does it matter?
There's a story that Talib Kweli tells a lot about Hip Hop for Respect. Here he is telling it on his podcast in 2021.
And I was very, I was kind of down in the dumps about the fact that people didn't really play the song or support it in the industry. Until one day I was on Flatbush Avenue and a kid told me, stopped me in the street. He was like, yo, I used to think I had to bust my gun and be a drug dealer, be a gangster rapper until I heard Hip Hop for Respect. Oh. And then it made me realize I don't have to do that and I could still be dope. And it's like, you know, that's if you could everything. Touch one soul.
Just one soul.
Just one.
Just in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So, you know, that helped.
I love it.
We touched one guy with all that money we spent.
You touched more than that, I'm sure.
Rest in peace to Amadou Diallo.
We reppin' it. Why they trying to fill us with more lead than Zeppelin?
People united, let's hold it down. We got to have one. Love, peace, and understanding. One love, one fight. One hate, one voice, one fight. My people united, let's hold it down. We got to have one. Love, peace, and understanding.
Shoe Leather is a production of the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. This episode was reported, written, and produced by me, Khadija Alam.
And me, Rachel Kahn. Joanne Farian is our executive producer and professor. Rachel Quester and Peter Leonard are our co-professors. Special thanks to Columbia Digital Libraries and Brendan Klinkenberg.
Shoe Leather's theme music, Squeegees, is by Ben Lewis, Doran Zunas, and Camille Miller. Remixed by Peter Leonard. Other music by Blue Dot Sessions.
Our graphic was created by Indy Schultens with help from Serena Bolani.